We are here because we are people of faith. Within each of us lives the conviction of a saving faith that could restore our broken planet and illuminate the lives of our sisters and brothers. Ancient wisdom teaches that we are who would save the world must first save ourselves. We who would restore the planet must learn to restore the broken structures of the institutions closest to hand, to illuminate the lives of our companions and friends. To this end, let us center ourselves, acknowledging the trouble of mind and vexation of spirit that accompany us even here. Let us open ourselves to that creative mystery which is at work in our striving.
My name is Mike LeBurkin, a.k.a. Don Miguel. 3 years ago, one dark, stormy night, I dreamt that my Piper Club crashed into Great Lady Lake and I was thrashing in the black, icy water, hyperventilating, uncontrollably gulping short breaths, undergoing stroke territory, high blood pressure, blue lips, pale skin, feeling the needles of cold shock. Life was flashing before my eyes. I was frantic, felt useless, drowning without self-esteem, going under. And then I heard a patrolling helicopter and saw the initials on its side, F-U-U-C-A. It was piloted by Janet Newminister. The president, the diver, was guiding her and climbed down the rescue ladder, fluttering in the vicious Arctic wind, and dove into the water. She tapped me on the shoulder and said, "My name is Nell, and we're going to get you and your dog out of here to a safe place." I said, "It's not a dog, it's my toupee." Then I passed out. I awoke in a warm house and hall and was plied with chicken soup, tea, coffee, delicious potluck, home-cooked meals, and coupons for wine. I was told by members of the Worship Forum, Nominating Fellowship, Religious Education, Stewardship, Philosophical Discussion, Sack Lunch, and Scandinavian Dance Committees that I was truly needed. I joined them all, and then was awarded the role of a teenager in a play called On Golden Pond. I got well. I was strengthened by a new sense of self-respect, purpose, responsibility, reduced selfishness, generosity, and ability to share burdens as I reflected on these qualities in my rescuers. For many, responsibility is a detachable burden easily shifted to the shoulders of an anthropomorphic god, fate, fortune, luck, investment bankers, insurance companies, Congress, or neighbors. Historically, and even in recent politics, astrology has unloaded responsibility upon the cosmos. Unitarian Universalists take responsibilities onto their own shoulders. Responsibility begins with purpose. Purpose lifts us from the mere physical and raises us toward individual freedom. The greatest purpose in life is to use it for something that outlasts it. Strong lives are motivated by dynamic purposes. Lesser ones exist in wishes and inhibitions. As John Sanders says, if you are a piano, you can either make music or be a beautiful doorstop. Sharing what we have with others for the betterment of personkind, bringing hope to the despondent and love to the lonely, now that's purpose. Responsibility points to sharing the burden. The Torah says, you shall love the stranger because you were strangers in Egypt. Put yourself in the other gal's shoes. How does it feel to be elderly, weak, hard of hearing, blind, without teeth, hungry, homeless, to lose a parent, spouse, or child? How is she feeling the first weeks on a job or just moving into a new neighborhood? Or if she cuts in front of you on MOPAC, she's probably under tension. Even strong leaders have dozens of burdens, and they are struggling with failures, doubts, unfulfilled plans. Sharing the burden requires generosity of spirit, time, and treasure. Nothing can make you more beautiful or handsome than the wish to scatter joy and not pain. We cannot eliminate pain, but we can alleviate it. It's good to give a stranger a meal or a night's lodging, to give courage to a companion. We should be as kind to a person as we are to a painting when we place it in a good light. When we die, we keep in our hands only what we give away in our lifetime. Thus, the things we want most, life, liberty, peace, and freedom in the pursuit of happiness, are attained by giving them to others. Giving money is empowering. It's also like manure. It's not worth much unless you spread it around, encouraging young things to grow. When I was sinking underwater, I was sad that I would not contribute to the future of my grandchildren and see them grow up. Whether or not you have genetic or adopted children, you yourself are a parent to future generations. Responsibility means investing in the future. If you're not committed to investing in the future, you don't deserve one. I want to join hands with past Unitarian Universalists and future generations in providing honest, liberal religion, ensuring the existence of a tolerant, giving, loving church that scientifically and Darwinically explores the mystery of our presence here. In this church, I feel most Jewish, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, and Zen. I feel affirmed, confirmed, communion, baptized, bar mitzvah, halal, and kosher, and in some days, existentially vegan. I feel generous, responsible, purposeful, and like I'm sharing the burdens of others. And it's not only a church that helps the needy, it transforms them into strong people. It strengthens the strong and keeps them strong so they can remain purposeful. This is also a church that shares joys as well as burdens. I'm stronger because I always find high fives, hand clasps, hugs and smiles, and sharing of happiness. 3 years ago, I was drawn to this church as a butterfly is drawn to the nectar of Texas Red Star hibiscus. I want to thank you all here for pulling me aboard and welcoming me on the journey of life with you and allowing me to serve this church. I've increased my contribution by more than 10% each year, and I'm increasing it by 10% for 2010. I am already 70 years old. In the spring, I'm going to leave a legacy in my will to this church to keep that helicopter in my dream in the air. It takes fuel, mechanics, and maintenance that only our money and time can provide. Join future generations in me to help transform the needy into the strong, empower the already strong, and keep Janet Neuminster flying, the FUUCA logo visible in the skies, and Nell Newton diving into the dark, icy waters of Great Lady Lake.
We come now to the part of our service where we have silent meditation. We join now together in a time of meditation or prayer, spoken at first and then for a time in the peace that silence brings. As we enter into silence, we remember the many connections that sustain and uplift us through its religious community. We remember those who preceded us, whose contributions built a free faith, who built this home for its practice. We remember those around us whose continuing care and thought and deed is an ongoing blessing in our lives, keeping the dream of free religion alive in our time. We remember those who will follow us, the children presently in our care, and those not yet to come to light, who will inherit the work of our hands and hearts. In the silence now, we sit surrounded by these many connections, visible and invisible, that remind us every day that we are not alone.
Good morning, everybody. It's good to be together today on such a gorgeous, glorious fall day as this is. My reading today consists of some excerpts from a book titled How to Face Life by Rabbi Stephen Wise. Rabbi Wise, his words are just a little flowery, just a little bit archaic to you perhaps, but I think the sentiment is extremely valuable, so we'll get with it. Give yourself to something great. Enroll under the banner of a high cause. Choose as your own some standard of self-sacrifice. Attach yourself to a movement that makes not for your own gain, but for the welfare of all, and you will have come upon a richly satisfying as well as engrossing adventure. Either your spirit will greatly and nobly, self-forgettingly endeavor, or you will be in danger of yielding to the dominance of your appetites. You will be in peril of being overcome by your masterful passions. Dare to give every power of your life to the furtherance of a mighty cause. Let something so high and noble come into your life that it shall be expulsive of all things low and mean. The person one honors most, the person who one has reason to cherish most highly, is that person into whose life something so lofty and commanding has come as to have left no room for the mean and petty. Having given themselves to the furtherance of a high and exalted ideal, life leaves no place for the mean. The selfish and the unworthy retreats with the precipitancy of a coward before the imperiousness of the noble impulse, the divine aim. Now, earlier in my interim ministry with you, I talked with you about your need to create and articulate a new identity for yourselves. As a congregation, you have changed, and your identity is different. And one way that you might choose to create a new identity is by developing a covenant of healthy relations. A covenant, as you know, has to do with how we treat each other as we navigate this tricky business of acting in the world together. What we promise to one another as we engage in the larger community in mission. So today I want to talk with you about mission, what it means to Unitarian Universalists. Because I have a hunch that for some of you, mission might be that door-to-door kind of manner that some religions have of making sure everybody gets at least one disruption on a Saturday morning, and to know about their particular mission. Some of you may not have thought of it as something that Unitarian Universalists would do. Well, I want to share with you just a couple of mission statements by congregations in the UUA, Unitarian Universalist Association. This particular one introduces itself as an inclusive and nurturing religious community engaged in thoughtful pursuit of truth and meaning. Our mission is to grow as a beacon of hope, sharing a vision of a world community that embraces diversity and promotes justice and respectful stewardship within the interdependent web of existence. Sounds like a pretty good task to me. Another one that I think you will find useful to you is stated in four parts, and this is a way that mission statements can be crafted. They can be in any shape or size. This one says the mission of, and then the congregation's name, is to serve our members and friends by providing a welcoming, inclusive community to explore and encourage personal growth. To serve the greater town by promoting religious, racial, and social harmony. To serve liberal religion by embodying Unitarian Universalist values within our congregation and in society at large. And to serve the global community by participating in transformative action to achieve a sustainable and humane world. I would say those are definitely very important purposes for any congregation. Now that you have heard some examples, I would like to encourage you to think of it as this way. In this way, covenant refers to the promises or commitments that people make to one another in the context of religious community about how they will treat each other. Mission, then, implies the shared purpose, struggle, witness of a people who take their covenant seriously. Or you might think of it this way. Our flaming chalice here is a good illustration. The chalice bowl represents the covenant that binds the people together in free religious association. Covenant responds to the question, who are we and how shall we treat one another? What promises do we make to each other? And the flame, not quite touching, but certainly flaring outside the bowl of the chalice, symbolizes our mission, the burning shared responsibility, the burning shared vision of a transforming and transformed religious community. Mission then responds to the question, given who we are and what we promise to one another, what are we to do in the world? Without the flame, the mission, then the living, dynamic quality of religious life is weakened. And without the bowl, the covenant, the flame either dies or goes out of control. Covenant holds mission together, and mission gives covenant heart, life, and fire. So covenant is the chalice, and mission is the flame. What is the fuel that feeds the fire? We are the oil in the vessel. We supply the fuel by our contributions of time, energy, and our financial resources. We are the renewable, non-fossil, non-polluting, clean-burning fuel that supplies our free faith. We are the means by which mission happens in this congregation. One aspect of mission that I want to explore with you now is commitment. It seems to me that commitment is essential in mission, without which mission simply would not exist. The idea of commitment and my own commitment was dramatically illustrated for me way back in the summer of 1976. That summer, I was deeply involved with a community production of the musical 1776 at the Little Theater of Alexandria, Virginia. Much of this musical is fanciful, made up, that is, but there is a good deal of it that rests on historical documents. This particular show ran for 42 performances, and I attended 39 of them. As soon as my backstage work was finished, I'd go up into the light booth, or I'd stand in the wings. Occasionally, I'd find a seat in the house, those few occasions when it wasn't full, and I'd lose myself in the drama of the year 1776, when the nation was struggling toward identity, covenant, and mission. And for those of you who think there's nothing quite like Texas history, I agree with you. But this was a good bit of history, too. Of course, I loved every minute of the show. But one of the songs that never failed to move me was one that John Adams, one of the revolutionaries in Philadelphia, sang on an empty stage. Just one spot, right on him. Everything else was dark. Things looked very bleak. Without some crucial votes, the Declaration of Independence from Great Britain could not be signed. Adams begins by quoting the latest dispatch by General George Washington, then in the field with his starving troops. General Washington had been sending messages to the Continental Congress for months, asking for supplies, guidance, moral support, any kind of response at all. And the Congress had been ignoring his increasingly desperate messages, not acknowledging them in any way. And the last straw was when this young fellow, the messenger, troops into the room, throws a dispatch on the table, and troops out again. John Adams picks it up. He reads Washington's words. Is anybody there? Does anybody care? And then Adams asks, does anybody see what I see? They want me to quit. They say, John, give up the fight. Still to England I say, good night, forever good night. For I have crossed the Rubicon. Let the bridges be burned behind me. Come what may, come what may. Commitment. The croakers all say we'll rue the day. There'll be hell to pay in fiery purgatory. Through all the gloom, I can see the rays of ravishing light and glory. Is anybody there? Does anybody care? Does anybody see what I see? I see fireworks. I see pageant and pomp and parade. I hear bells ringing out. I hear the cannons roar. I see Americans, all Americans, free forevermore. How quiet the chamber is. How silent the chamber is. Is anybody there? Does anybody care? Does anybody see what I see? And after that soliloquy, the rest, as they say, is history. For me, that soliloquy is a turning point. It shows the fire of commitment to freedom, a flame within Adams, a fire that he was then able to kindle in others. Commitment to the community, to the covenant, and to the mission to which he sought to draw the others in the Continental Congress. I believe that commitment is crucial if our mission is to succeed. I also hold that congregations have an obligation to be in mission, just as they are obliged to be structured on the foundations of covenant, the shared promise and affirmation. Emil Brunner said it so well, the church exists by mission as fire exists by burning. As fire exists by burning. A thinker who helps me understand how religion works in our lives and how important is commitment is Abraham Maslow. You'll remember that Maslow wrote of a hierarchy of needs, some of which are very basic for survival. If you don't get those needs met, you die. These are what he calls deficiency needs. But on up the scale come what he calls being values, at the top of which is self-actualization. The self-actualized person is one who has his or her act together, whose dreams are not out there and actions in some other place, but who has managed to bring dreams and deeds together, who lives a life that seems of a piece, a life of creativity and integrity. Religion, in the way that it can tie everything together, is a force in the life of the self-actualized individual. Maslow wrote about the characteristic strength of self-actualizing people. Far from being persons of narcissism and self-contemplation, he says of them, quote, self-actualizing people are, without one single exception, involved in a cause outside their own skin, in something outside themselves. They are devoted, working at something which is very precious to them. some calling or vocation in the old sense, in the priestly sense. End quote. A cause outside their own skin, he is speaking of religious commitment in mission. When you, as a congregation, have determined your mission, then you have determined what you pledge yourselves to do as self-actualizing people, as persons who are involved in causes beyond their own skin, who are devoted and working at something that is precious to you. And how do you do it, you might ask me? How do you fulfill your religious commitment in mission? Is it overwhelming to you as you consider what it means to serve the wider and desperate community? It can be paralyzing to us when we contemplate the enormity of the tasks that lie before us. And for that reason, I like to think of addressing mission by means of the four stages of social justice. I break that big chunk into four manageable elements, and then I can find the stage in which I can be most effective. The first stage of social responsibility is that of social service. And this is often where many of us find our niche, because it involves helping the community in very concrete and necessary ways. I know that this congregation, many of you, volunteer for organizations that provide for the welfare of the community. You work at the community clinic, People's Community Clinic. You work on Hands-On Austin. You work in the lunch program, the SAC lunch program. There's a whole double page of the activities and the social service workings of this church in last month's newsletter. Certainly, you offer exemplary service in the community, and you are fulfilling an area of your mission as a congregation, because in social service, you are acting on your concerns. I've only mentioned a couple of them, mind you. I know that there are a lot more. Another stage, we might say the next stage of social responsibility that some of you have taken on and that I would encourage more of us to do, is that of social education. Sometimes congregations pursue social education at the same time as many members are involved in social service. This involves forming study groups to investigate and educate ourselves about the root causes of social ills, perhaps homelessness, for an example. Perhaps some of you are taking this kind of course around the community. The goal of social education is to understand in preparation for action. Next, in the typical stages of social responsibility, is that of social witness. This is a much more activist stage than the first two. Social witness generally follows in the life of persons who have participated in social service and social education, and it might consist of things like letter writing, petition signing, organized lobbying for some social issue, and sometimes participating in demonstrations, putting yourself right out there. It is not everybody's cup of tea by any means. Social witness builds on the strengths of social service and education, but it is performed by far fewer people. It can culminate for some in taking one's concerns to the legislature or the judiciary. And now, the fourth and the most committed kind of social responsibility, and that is called social action. In this stage, persons might become activists, and they might even engage in civil disobedience. They might engage in boycotts, putting themselves at personal risk. Very few of us ever reach this stage because it is the most drastic and the consequences are serious, including possible imprisonment and bodily harm. Some of you here may have engaged in social action and you have survived it, so you can tell us the commitment that it requires. But most of us tend towards social service, education, and sometimes witness. This is how we, religious liberals, gather the language about ethical and moral values that give us purchase in the political discourse. By learning about and doing the stages of social justice that are the best fit for each of us, we live our values, we put our principles into action. This is the talk that we can walk. This is how we articulate and celebrate a liberal moral language. To take others seriously and their needs and the functioning of our community, to reach out to others with shared purpose, struggle, and witness. This is mission. We do it in stages, and we do it as an imperative of our free faith. As we are inevitably related to and with one another, what should our actions be? How can we help to transform the world, heal its brokenness, and live our ethical and religious commitment? These are mission and identity questions, ones that I want to explore with you more and more. And if you recall, when you had Dr. Peter Steinke here last winter, he referred to mission as an extremely important imperative of this congregation, to develop and then live your purpose and your mission. My last words are from the writings of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He said, quote, "The religion that ends with the individual ends." May our religion not end. So may it be.
If you are proud of this church, become its advocate. If you are concerned for its future, send its message. If its values resonate deep within you, give it a measure of your devotion. This church cannot survive without your faith, your confidence, your enthusiasm. Its destiny, the larger hope, rests in your hands.